Hello and welcome to The Exit presented by Flippa. I'm your co-host, Steve McGarry, and this is a 30-minute podcast featuring expert entrepreneurs who have been there and done it. They've bought businesses, they've sold businesses, and they've operated dozens of businesses all at once. But before we dive into this episode, definitely be sure to check out my interview with Judd Armstrong on the previous episode, wherever you're listening to this podcast, whether it's on Spotify, SoundCloud, or even on YouTube. You can definitely check out the link to that previous episode. You don't want to miss that. So for this episode, I have the honor and privilege to sitting down with Shaquille Prasla, the founder of SC Ventures. We cover a ton in this interview, and Shaquille was really, really great in describing exactly how SC Ventures goes through their diligence process. So the general theme of this was really diving into the nitty-gritty of how they look at buying businesses. And you'll notice as we go through the conversation, he really starts talking about how they've scaled to this really pretty massive size that they're at right now, which is quite impressive. I want to leave it as a treat. So definitely stick around through to the end of the interview, all the way through, because he gets to the point where he's talking about the scale of SC Ventures. And no matter what stage you guys are at listening to this podcast, it's going to be a really impressive feat here. So definitely stick around to the end and let's dive right into my interview with Shaquille Prasla, the founder and CEO of SC Ventures. What is up, guys? I am here with Shaquille Prasla from SC Ventures, the founder, as we just discussed, of SC Ventures. How you doing, Shaquille?
Hey, good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for coming on the show. We got a lot to talk about. I guess to kick things off, let's start with your story. Like, what brought you to start SC Ventures?
Yeah, so my journey started in 2014 when I was looking for a career change. And I had no idea what to do. So I went on google.com and I started looking up jobs to have from home. I just wanted to work from home. And I came across a few links talking about how you could sell products online, how you could import stuff. And I went down this rabbit hole and I realized that this is kind of cool. I want to start something from my home. I want to work from my pajamas. I want to wake up whenever. And so I actually packed my bags and I went to China. I went to the Canton Fair, which is the world's largest trade show. I didn't know what I was doing, honestly. I had no idea. I just knew I wanted to live in comfort. And so I walked the aisles of Canton Fair for a few weeks, decided I want to import jewelry, like little fashion jewelry for men and men's accessories. Mm-hmm. Came back, started importing that, went on Odesk, which is Upwork today, and just hired a bunch of contractors. At that time, I knew nothing about Black Hat SEO. I didn't know anything about how, you know, if someone guarantees you rankings, it's probably Black Hat. I just said, you know, let's just go with it. I built my website then and started driving some traffic. The way I learned was I would look at my competitors. I would look at companies that are doing well. And then I would really just research. I bought some courses and I just self-educated myself. Mm-hmm. But the main thing was that you have to go all in and you have to go with the mentality that it's this or nothing. And I knew that I wanted to just kind of live in that comfort lifestyle. So I started ProCuffs back then. It took about a year to make it profitable. A really long time because, again, you're just... People forget, knowing your numbers. And when you come from not really building any P&Ls and stuff, you kind of just keep doing things, not looking at your bank account. And I knew it kept dwindling. But finally, after a year, I made it profitable. I was living that comfort lifestyle I wanted to do. And I was sort of at a crossroads again. I'm living comfortably, but it's not enough. Mm-hmm. It's, some people live the 4-hour work week and they're like, okay, I've done it. Like, what's next? So I went on this journey of trying to live a 4-hour work week per company. At that time, that's what I wanted to do. And so I I went on Quiet Light Brokerage, which is another brokerage company that sells online companies. And I bought Mr. Cold. Then I bought it at a 1.5x multiple. And I was actually able to make my money back within 6 months. And one of the ways I was able to do that, this was my first acquisition, but this company was only selling on their website, not on Amazon. And this was 2015 when private label was just picking up steam, but it was still relatively easy to list things online on Amazon. So I just took the products from Mr. Cold and started selling them on Amazon. And that's it. I didn't do anything else. I didn't do any other fancy website redesign, repackaging, anything. I just made my money back in 6 months. So I figured I'm onto something. There has to be other sellers like this that could be making this mistake of just not utilizing technology. So fast forward to today, we've done over a dozen acquisitions, ranging from six figures to seven figures. We're focusing on, you know, around the seven figure mark now. And we have 80 employees, 40 in the US and 40 overseas. We have, you know, a streamlined process with each company where we hire a CEO to run each of our companies for us. We have a back office that I call that works as an agency that, you know, does paid advertising for all of our companies, does content, does optimization, does conversion rate optimization. So we have a whole team that does kind of everything to A to Z. And I like to say me and my partners act like the chairperson and sort of sit at the board level and give guidance to our CEOs.
Nice. Nice. That's a pretty substantially large team, 80 people all across the world. That's impressive. So in terms of scaling, I think that's because that level of growth is amazing. I mean, being able to do a seven-figure acquisition is pretty, you know, that's a larger size acquisition. So what was that process like? I know that, you know, if you were to kind of slowly, you built it profitable after a year, you mentioned, and were you actually using your own cash reserves to do these acquisitions? Are you doing financing? How are you guys kind of, how was that process of getting into those bigger acquisitions?
Yeah. So I am not backed by a PE firm. You know, I'm not like Thrasio that has a bunch of money throwing at you. This is for my savings or bank loans or seller financing or performance holdouts. There's various ways to get to financing, but yeah, I take on all the liability. And, you know, maybe it's not the best way, but this was a way for me to, you know, make sure that my skin's in the game and I do a good job running the company. So yeah, this is, you know, all of our savings or liability that we take on to buy these businesses.
Got it. So when you were first starting, did you bring on a couple partners? Did you bring on like a couple co-founders? Were you just kind of solo with contractors on Upwork at the time? How was that process for you?
You know, that's an interesting question, Steve. When I first started, I was by myself. And after the third acquisition, I sort of kept hitting roadblocks. And it was because of the knowledge that I had. I was becoming the bottleneck. And as much as you learn, you try to be good at everything, but it's hard to be good at everything. And so I realized at that time that I needed a partner that could take on some of the risks, some of the liabilities, some of the work. I was getting burnt out after, you know, those 3-4 acquisitions. So I ended up meeting my first partner through a Facebook group. And, you know, when people tell you, you know, go network, go to conferences, do this, do that, it's really valuable. I think, you know, if you're looking to buy companies, if you're even looking to do anything, I would definitely encourage people to meet as many people as you can. You know, in today's age, you get random LinkedIn requests and stuff. go do that. Go meet new people. But yeah, I met my partner in a Facebook group, and that helped propel quicker acquisitions after that.
Nice. Nice. Meeting a partner in a Facebook group. I love it. That's definitely a testament to all those, you know, all those Facebook groups out there. I'm in quite a few of them, just with not only website investing, but real estate and stuff like that. So that's really great to hear that you actually met a successful partner that you guys got along with, you work well with. That's really, really inspiring that you could pull that off, So you met your partner, you started scaling up. Now you're at 80 people. What is an example of one of the sites that you would be looking at? You mentioned that now you're at the seven-figure mark, which is kind of, that's not kind of, it is beyond a lot of people's reach, I think. Just the average person that's kind of getting into buying and selling. So in terms of the excitement in the team, the scaling in the team, the keeping the quality on the team, the managing all these contractors, you're hiring CEOs, you're putting them in to manage the companies. Walk us through one of those acquisitions on the front end where, you know, it's clear you have this amazing back office and this back end set up. What is it like when you're going through the diligence of a business? Are you asking for P&Ls? I know you're digging deep. And you mentioned before we jumped on the call, you have a pretty clear process now. Can you share something about the process that you go through for buying one of these seven figures?
Yeah. So every day I'm actively looking at businesses to buy. I have alerts set up. And you could do that with any brokerage company. Just sign up through their email list or go to centurica.com or bizbysell.com and just set up an alert. You'll see new listings every day. So that's my initial process is, you know, if I see a listing, I'll ask for the prospectus. Typically for every 100 prospectuses, I'll see maybe 10 I'll dig into further. Mm-hmm. And out of those 10, maybe two I'll place an offer. So it's a very small group. And I've sort of learned that along the way, what I like and what I don't like. And so the once I realize that this is a good company, the prospectus looks nice, I usually send like 15 burning questions to the seller. I typically do it via email. Mm-hmm. And it's because I've realized sometimes I've seen you get better, clear answers via email versus the phone because I ask typically data-backed questions, and over the phone you may not have it. So via email, they're able to do it. So once I ask those 15 questions, you know, a typical question may be, hey, I saw there was a drop from June to July, and you haven't had that in previous months. Why? Or, you know, your average order value is going down, or your gross margin's going down, or your net profit's going down. Anything that would cause a red flag, those are some questions I would ask. Mm-hmm. Once that looks good to me, that, hey, those red flags aren't a big deal, I could help solve those problems, I get on the phone with the seller and the broker. And typically, this is where you want to build your rapport, your empathy, and a good relationship with the seller. It's easy to knock down a business and rip it apart, but look at it from a seller's point of view. You are bashing their baby that they've built, and you want to frame questions in a way where you're not bashing them. You know, you could just say, hey, great job on building this company. I'm interested in carrying on your legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, but I saw a drop in this. Could you help explain why that happened? So, you know, I typically like to come up with more questions. You want to play a detective. You're sort of playing a detective role right now and trying to learn about the business. You're lifting the hood up. If a seller's been running this company for multiple years, you're trying to learn all that in 30 days or 45 days. That's a lot to learn. And you have to ask a lot of questions. Ask more questions than less. Be curious. Just because you have a background software, back you're a content writer, you know, still ask those questions. So once, you know, I have those two rounds of email and a phone call, typically I'll write up a letter of intent. You know, it could be as simple as, you know, you could use a template. You could look up LOI templates, or you could do it via email. You know, and I'll typically give the asking price or a little bit lower. If I really like the business, I'll give the asking price. But if I feel like there's some negotiation, I'll give about 15% less. You want to gauge where you stand by asking the broker as well. You know, hey, broker, I'm really interested in this business. What do I need to do to win the business? It could be as simple as that. So let's just say the business is going for $100,000. I'll offer $85,000. And I'll also ask the seller on the phone is, will you take any type of seller financing? Are you open to any performance holdouts, right? With seller financing, it allows you to put up less, but it allows them to collect interest. So they're still making some money over the course of the next few years. Performance or holdout allows you to obviously pay less upfront, but allows the seller to make more on the back end if they believe that you can sustain or grow the business. And we could talk about kind of different things later, but that's what I'll do. If I feel like there's seller financing available, I'll put that into the LOI. Remember, if there's multiple offers, typically a seller usually accepts the highest offer unless they really like you. And so that's what comes back to, you know, making the seller like you a lot more than other people. Once the offer gets accepted, you are officially in the due diligence phase. Typically, those are anywhere from 14 to 30 days, unless there's bank financing, then it's longer. But during the due diligence, I like to go deep into four categories. So it's financials, operations, marketing, and kind of the technology aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And so I break it down into those four categories. I play a bigger role in financials because the business is valued on the financials, on the seller's discretionary earnings, right? There's a multiple tied to it. So you sort of want to remake the P&L. And so I'll ask for the authorized.net statements, credit card statements. You know, if you're Shopify, I want access to Shopify. If it's Amazon, I want access to Amazon. If you're affiliate, I want access to AdSense. I want access to everything that will verify money coming in and money going out. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work. And if you don't want to do all the work, there's companies out there that offer kind of doing due diligence for you, but you just don't learn anything along the way. It's okay to fail, and it's okay to ask for help too, but you know, try to learn on your own as you go. So during, you know, sort of this discovery phase, I'm learning, but I'm asking questions. At the end of 30 days, if everything looks good, that's when you sign your official agreement, the asset purchase agreement, the bill of sale, if there's a consulting agreement. Typically, what I like to include in my consulting agreement is I want the seller to stay on for at least 3 months. You usually get the first month for free or 40 hours for the month. I usually like to keep the seller on for longer than that. It comes back to the transfer of knowledge. And this is where I see people messing up often is you take over a business, but now you're left alone. And you know, the seller may be available, but if I have that in contract, it gives me a peace of mind. So mm-hmm. I'll keep the seller on for 3 months. Asset purchase agreement is usually straightforward. If you have, you know, if it's the same as the LOI offer, and then you go through, you know, you wire the money to an escrow, you get all the assets, and the money gets released to the seller, and now you own your own business. The first, I would say, 30 days, I do not make many changes. I want to get used to the business. I want to get used to the employees. I want to let the employees know that, hey, I'm the new owner. I'm not looking to do any changes right away. And a lot of people depend, you know, their families depend on this job. And when you get a new owner, a lot of anxiety blows up. So you want to talk to employees directly, get to know them. But yeah, for the first 30 days, I don't make any changes. From days 31 to 60, I'll identify two or three quick changes that allow me to make a little bit more money. Maybe it's negotiating on suppliers. Maybe it's reducing a certain expense. So just some low-hanging fruits I'll do in the 31 to 60 days. And after 60 days, at that point, I have developed kind of a year-long plan and a three-year goal and five-year goal. And so that's what I start hitting on. But yeah, after that, that's typically how we do it. Along the way of my due diligence, I forgot to mention this, but we start looking for a CEO as well. Mm-hmm. Typically, I'll ask my network. I'll go to Indeed, LinkedIn. I will hire recruiting agencies to go help me look for someone as well. But yeah, we do look for a CEO during due diligence process.
Got it. That's a solid way of going through and getting access to everything from pretty much end to end right there. So you touched on something that we talked about briefly before the show, which was the failures. And I think that is very important for all of the new, both buyers and sellers out there that are listening. What would an example of that be? And what would you give somebody advice that, you know, let's say they buy an e-commerce business that was overly exposed to Facebook ads and their algorithm and changing and rates and whatnot, and they get the business, it completely flops because they're not good at Facebook ads or somebody's too expensive to hire to run Facebook ads, making it unprofitable. What would you give somebody advice in terms of if a failure comes around?
Yeah, that example you gave, Steve, happens quite often, right? I think if you look at today's day and age, you know, just COVID happening, people losing their jobs, people hearing e-commerce is getting, you know, more and more people are shopping online and stuff. People's, you know, ears raise up and they're like, how do I get part of this? And they may look for businesses for sale. And people realize that, oh, you could buy businesses for anywhere from, you know, 2x multiple to 4x multiple. That's a cheap investment. I think when people realize that if it's a 2x multiple, that's a 50% ROI on your money. Even if it's a 4x multiple, that's a 25% ROI on your money, right? So I think people get excited about that. And when you get too excited, you start having blind spots. You start accepting red flags. And that's where I tell people to just stop. Do not buy your first deal. Don't even buy your second deal that you look at. Look at it as a way that you're going through education. You're sort of learning along the way. You know, I always say to de-risk yourself and to have the highest probability of you having success in your business, make sure that the flaws in the business or the strengths in the business can match your skill set, right? And the example that you gave, if it's heavily dependent on Facebook ads and you don't know, you know, jack crack about, you know, lookalike audiences, well, don't buy the business. Really don't buy the business. Or partner up with someone that knows Facebook ads. You know, maybe you're good at operations. Look for someone that may be good with Facebook ads. You know, the last option is agencies, but you know, agencies, I've had it multiple times where we've worked with agencies and the person I was working with was super good, but they start getting recruited by other agencies. They go, you know, they might go do something else and you lose that person as well. So yes, you do have that option, but definitely match your skill set. You know, if you're a good graphic designer, look for a website that's, you know, crappy, that has a low conversion rate that you think you could improve, you know, the conversion rate on. if you're a content writer, look for, you know, companies that are offering, you know, thin websites, but that's doing well. I don't even know what my specialty is, but I just like trimming the fat of businesses. So if I see that too much spending's going on, I just like to cut it in half and start tweaking it from there. But yeah, some people are really good at Amazon. Some people are really good at Facebook ads. Some people are really good at Google ads. Find those voids in the company and then buy that company. Don't get paralysis by analysis. You will end up failing.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. So the finale question that I ask everybody is, knowing what you know now, what would you tell Shaquille 10 years ago? It's an open-ended question.
Yeah, honestly, running multiple companies, having a big team is fulfilling. It matches sort of my, personality of doing multiple things at once. If I were to do this again, I would take 2 or 3 heavy swings instead of a dozen or so doubles. It gets exhausting. It's great right now, but if I were to do this again, I'd probably buy 2 or 3 larger companies. And I'm sort of heading toward that path anyways, as I sell through my smaller companies, but I think that would be one thing. And then 2 is, I sort of stated this before, but just be super curious in your journey. As you go acquire companies, I wouldn't say sellers do this intentionally, but if you don't ask a question, you won't learn. And many sellers just want to sell their business, right? I'm sure there's some red flags, there's some flaws. You're not going to find out if you don't ask a question. So just be a reporter, whatever, ask a bunch of questions.
Nice. Nice. Well, that's all the questions I have for you, Shaquille. Thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
If you guys are listening on iTunes or Spotify or watching on YouTube, check the links in the show notes to check out all of Shaquille's social media and his business. Thanks again, Shaquille.
Thanks, Dan. Good.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Exit Podcast. If you're listening in on Spotify, SoundCloud, or YouTube or iTunes, definitely check out the show notes where you will see all the links that Shaquille mentioned in the interview. And definitely don't forget to leave a subscribe and a like. If you're feeling extra generous today, definitely leave a comment on SoundCloud, because you're definitely not going to want to miss this next episode that's rolling out here shortly. So definitely smash the subscribe button, and I will see you guys on the next episode here on The Exit Podcast.